The Wall of Darkness. First published in Super Science Stories, July 1949. Collected in The Other Side of the Sky.
Many and strange are the universes that drift like bubbles in the foam upon the river of time. Some, very few, move against or athwart its current, and fewer still are those that lie forever beyond its reach, knowing nothing of the future or the past. Chervain's tiny cosmos was not one of these. Its strangeness was of a different order. It held one world only, the planet of Chervain's race, and a single star, the great sun Trilorn, that brought it life and light. Chervain knew nothing of night, for Trilorn was always high above the horizon, dipping near it only in the long months of winter. Beyond the borders of the Shadowland, it was true, there came a season when Trilorn disappeared below the edge of the world, and a darkness fell in which nothing could live. But even then the darkness was not absolute, though there were no stars to relieve it. Alone in its little cosmos, turning the same face always toward its solitary sun, Chervain's world was the last and the strangest jest of the Maker of the Stars. Yet as he looked across his father's lands, the thoughts that filled Chervain's mind were those that any human child might have known. He felt awe and curiosity and a little fear, and above all, a longing to go out into the great world before him. These things he was still too young to do, but the ancient house was on the highest ground for many miles, and he could look far out over the land that would one day be his. When he turned to the north, with Trilorn shining full upon his face, he could see many miles away the long line of mountains that curved around to the right, rising higher and higher, until they disappeared behind him in the direction of the Shadowland. One day when he was older, he would go through those mountains along the pass that led to the great lands of the east. On his left was the ocean, only a few miles away, and sometimes Chervain could hear the thunder of the waves as they fought and tumbled on the gently sloping sands. No one knew how far the ocean reached. Ships had set out across it, sailing northward, while Trilorn rose higher and higher in the sky, and the heat of its rays grew ever more intense. Long before the great sun had reached the zenith, they had been forced to return. If the mythical Firelands did indeed exist, no man could ever hope to reach their burning shores, unless the legends were really true. Once, it was said, there had been swift metal ships that could cross the ocean despite the heat of Trilorn, and so come to the lands on the other side of the world. Now these countries could be reached only by a tedious journey over land and sea, which could be shortened no more than a little by traveling as far north as one dared. All the inhabited countries of Chervain's world lay in the narrow belt between the burning heat and insufferable cold. In every land, the far north was an unapproachable region smitten by the fury of Trilorn. And to the south of all countries lay the vast and gloomy Shadowland, where Trilorn was never more than a pale disk on the horizon, and often was not visible at all. These things Chervain learned in the years of his childhood, and in those years he had no wish to leave the wide lands between the mountains and the sea. Since the dawn of time, his ancestors and the races before them had toiled to make these lands the fairest in the world. If they had failed, it was by a narrow margin. There were gardens bright with strange flowers. There were streams that trickled gently between moss-grown rocks to be lost in the pure waters of the tideless sea. There were fields of grain that rustled continually in the wind, as if the generations of seeds yet unborn were talking one to the other. In the wide meadows and beneath the trees, the friendly cattle wandered aimlessly with foolish cries. And there was the great house, with its enormous rooms and its endless corridors, vast enough in reality, but huger still to the mind of a child. This was the world in which Shervain had passed his years, the world he knew and loved. As yet, what lay beyond its borders had not concerned his mind. But Shervain's universe was not one of those free from the domination of time. The harvest ripened and was gathered into the granaries. Trilorn rocked slowly through its little arc of sky, and with the passing seasons, Shervain's mind and body grew. His land seemed smaller now. The mountains were nearer, and the sea was only a brief walk from the great house. He began to learn of the world in which he lived, and to be made ready for the part he must play in its shaping. Some of these things he learned from his father, Shervaal. But most was taught by Grail, who had come across the mountains in the days of his father's father, and had now been tutor to 3 generations of Shervain's family. He was fond of Grail, though the old man taught him many things he had no wish to learn, and the years of his boyhood passed pleasantly enough until the time came for him to go through the mountains into the lands beyond. Ages ago, his family had come from the great countries of the East, and in every generation since, the eldest son had made that pilgrimage again to spend a year of his youth among his cousins. It was a wise custom, for beyond the mountains much of the knowledge of the past still lingered, and there one could meet men from other lands and study their ways. In the last spring before his son's departure, Shervaal collected 3 of his servants and certain animals it is convenient to call horses, and took Shervain to see those parts of the land he had never visited before. They rode west to the sea and followed it for many days until Trilorn was noticeably nearer the horizon. Still they went south, their shadows lengthening before them, turning again to the east only when the rays of the sun seemed to have lost all their power. They were now well within the limits of the Shadow Land, and it would not be wise to go farther south until the summer was at its height.